What's going on, everybody? Welcome to the Hot Tag Wrestling Podcast. I am your host, Christy Francesco, and my other co-host here, Johnny Hot Tag, George Rogers, and Dean Hall Zeppel. Boys, how are you?
I thought I was officially the co-host of the show. That's what he said in text message earlier.
I mean, technically, yes, you are, until Johnny Hot Tag apologizes for his rudeness.
I don't even know what I said.
I don't remember what you said either.
Oh, yeah. That's
what, oh, yeah. Oh, something about sucking dick.
Oh, yeah. It was when I said, out of respect for you, I'm not going to watch these Disney movies.
That's it. That's what it was.
Because as a grown man, I don't have any need to.
It was very much akin to oral sex.
Yeah.
I did start Aladdin. I was enjoying it. And then I decided to play a little bit of Super Mario World. I'll finish it tomorrow.
A choice was made. It was a good one.
All right. So tonight we are checking back in to WCW pay-per-views. And as we speak tonight, it is September 14th. It is the official 25th anniversary of Fall Brawl from 1997, War Games. And we're going to talk a lot about, you know, what was going on around this era. This happened September 14th, 1997, from Winston-Salem, North Carolina. Horseman Country, as they say. I mean, Horseman Country was dead and gone at this point, but nonetheless, it was still Horseman.
Horseman Country still exists, Chris.
Dear Lord, yep. This man.
Well, look, they didn't sell anything in 92, 93, 94, but damn it, they're Horseman Country in 97. here we go. This paper.
I blame Eric Bischoff.
Oh, God. So, 148,000 pay-per-view buys here, just under 12,000 people paid a live gate of $213,330. By comparison, just a week prior to this, WWF ran In Your House Ground Zero, where 4,960 people packed Louisville, Kentucky, with 126,000 pay-per-view buys with a live gate of only $82,000. That's with Shawn Michaels and The Undertaker on top a month before their matchup in the first ever Hell in a Cell match. So, I mean, over 20.
Yeah, but wasn't the main event Bret Hart versus the Patriot?
Yes, it was. Yeah,
that's old
USA versus Canada rivalry.
Good old Del Wilkes with his Kurt Angle music.
Yeah.
But it's just wild to look at this, you know, this we're in 97 here, September 97, the WWF has really started to ramp up their programming. And it's about to get even more wild just, you know, 2 months later when the Montreal Screwjob occurs and we have the official, you know, I guess you could say the early birth here of the Mr. McMahon character. But still, in September on Fall Brawl, I mean, WCW is selling out a 12,000-seat arena, a live gate of over 200, you know, just about 214 grand, while WWF is got the buys, 126,000, only 22,000 off. But, man, a live gate of only 82 grand and only just not even 5,000 people. So it's just – it's crazy to look back at this Monday Night War. And, you know, right before we hit the record button, I wanted to go see if I could find some ratings for the Monday Night War for this era. So building up to Fall Brawl, here was some of the ratings for the Monday Night Wars. I'll start, you know, in August, Nitro 4.4 to Raw's 2.7, a 4 to a 2.9, a 4 to a 3.2, a 5 to a 2.1, a 5 to a 2.2. And then we get right up to this pay-per-view, Nitro more than doubling Raw here, 4.5 to a 2.2 for Raw, and then a 4 to a 2.6.
Back.
It's okay. I got that.
Restarted. My computer just decided to restart for a second.
Now you know how I feel. This is what happens.
Except for I'm on a Mac, Chris. You're on a PC.
I'm on a laptop. So
A PC. You're like,
I always look at a PC as like a desktop.
Oh, no. It just randomly just decided to restart. I was like, what happened? And then all of a sudden, that's when all that porn I was watching.
Probably.
No, it was probably the illegal AEW stream I watched last week. So, oh, no, yeah. That was on my phone. Never mind.
So here we are. You know, we're in the midst of those 83 weeks. I was just running down the ratings leading up to this point. How, you know, Nitro was a lot of occasions were doubling Monday Night Raw. Mm-hmm. So let's kind of get into this pay-per-view here. We are fresh off of Road Wild, which saw Hollywood Hulk Hogan defeat Lex Luger to win the WCW World Heavyweight title in the main event.
What a banger.
It was kind of odd booking because Luger won the title like a week before. So like the fact
four days prior. Yeah,
you don't say odd title booking in WCW. Chris involving Hulk Hogan.
Chris, mm-hmm. We texted back and forth about this about the WCW booking during this era. Mm-hmm. You said, about 96% of it didn't make sense.
It just didn't, because it's like the back and forth was just so head scratching.
Hogan didn't have the title, he should have just came out and be like, yeah, that don't work for me, brother. And then they should have just handed the title over him, like, oh, sorry, Mr. Hogan. Here's your belt back. Here's your belt back, Terry. Yeah.
I'm sure if he said that, he would have to do it. I mean, they have creative control. They start the show with a package about the main event, which puts the Horsemen versus the B-Squad of the NWO, which is just ridiculous to me. Like, you're taking over the wrestling world with the NWO, and you're going into a main event, you know, Fall Brawl. It's a huge pay-per-view. You know, it's War Games. And you're going in here with Kevin Nash, Buff Bagwell, Conan, and Six. Not Macho Man Randy Savage, not Hulk Hogan.
No, Savage was in the match.
Not in the War Games.
Yeah. Earlier in the pay per view, right?
Yeah, they could have swapped him out with
It was like
Savage and
Conan.
It was like the
excuse you. He's the Mexican Hulk Hogan.
You're not wrong. Not that America, doesn't... brother.
Sure. That doesn't work for me, hombre.
Hey, there. He spawned a lot of white people that wear their top button of their flannel shirt clothes and to go and to say hola.
Just saying, I did that as well. So
yeah, I 100%.
Yeah, I'm sure that's not the only thing. I'm sure Riverside High School was packed to the gills of Conan wannabes.
That's funny.
Excuse me. WCW didn't exist when we were in high school.
That's right.
They didn't make it to high school, George. They flunked out in eighth grade.
Yeah. Listen, George, I walked into the dungeon cafeteria for middle school dances dressed like Conan, all right?
Yeah.
You walked into the Dungeon of Doom dressed as Conan.
Chris was a regular at the Booty Man Cafe.
Chris's Dungeon of Doom character was Chris Pissy Pants.
Oh, man. We just stood in the corner and smile at Pissy Pants. Knees all buckled in together. Look at me. It's warm.
We lost. He's gone.
What's wild to me about putting the B Squad here is, you know, Halloween Havoc ended up being a massive pay-per-view as well. Then, you know, then of course you had, we all know the ending, but at the time, yeah. Starrcade was 2 months away. Hmm. About 3 months away. So, man, to throw your B-Squad out here against the Four Horsemen, I don't know if that's WCW catering to certain members of the NWO or that's, you know, them or Bischoff and team not really respecting. I mean, at this point, I think there was no cachet to the Horsemen, but still, you're in North Carolina. So in this particular spot, the Horsemen are still relevant. Hmm. So I don't know if that's a slight to the Horsemen.
I mean, Flair's always going to get a pop in North Carolina.
Right.
So, I mean, the fact that you are going to kind of just bring out, piece of shit Buff Bagwell and Six, who couldn't be bothered to put on his wrestling gear. Mm-hmm. It is almost like a disrespect to Ric Flair.
Well, that's something I've always said. I always felt like once the NWO started, it was just anybody from the old guard of WCW, they just did not respect one bit. Mm-hmm. And I've always felt that way. And it's not Ric Flair's fault and Arn Anderson's fault that at basically at this point the Four Horsemen were dead. It was booking that killed the Four Horsemen, because the Four Horsemen, in my opinion, and I know this is obviously retrospective, but I felt like this for like 25 years, the stable to go up against the NWO and to beat the NWO should have been the Four Horsemen. And what the Four Horsemen should have became was like the elite of WCW. I mean, listen, I love Malenko and I love Benoit, and I've been the only person that thought Mongo McMichael was entertaining in the ring, but it should have become like Flair and like Luger and Sting and like DDP. That should have been like the Four Horsemen to take down the NWO. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. So like for how I look at it is, and this is kind of the overall.
And not to cut you off, but Flair and Bischoff legitimately hated each other too. So that didn't help things.
Yeah. So what bothers me here, and I think this was the beginning for me of the end of the cachet, not to use that word again, but it fits. This was the end of the, I guess you could say, the romance period for me with the NWO, looking back now, because mm-hmm. they were so, so big, so popular, and so dominant at this time. And I understand the point of Eric Bischoff going against tradition and going against the way wrestling always was, where, you know, the heel gets some heat, but, you know, eventually the baby face comes back and sends them home happy. That thing's, what the hell?
It's a popcorn bucket.
But there came a point, and I think this is where it really started to wane on me, was that the NWO just kept running through people and just not getting their comeuppance ever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And there comes a point where I'm just like, God, if the Horsemen can't even get a pinfall on them in their B squad, how I can't look at anybody else as a viable solution mm-hmm. to putting the NWO down. Mm-hmm. And I felt like this was kind of where it started on me, where the bloom was off the rose, where Jesus, man, like this is kind of, you know, getting really boring, because anytime I see one of my favorite wrestlers, I'm just assuming anybody in the crowd, I'm also just start going over to the NWO, because whoever I love is just going to get squashed by the NWO anyway. Mm. And I think that really started the downfall of not only just WCW, obviously, but, you know, the love affair of the NWO.
Mm. And we'll talk about one of them tonight, because when we get to the main event, obviously the Kurt Hennig turn, which I have always hated.
Yeah.
There were three members of the NWO that I really hated. It was Macho Man's turn into the NWO. Mm-hmm. Hated it. It was Kurt Hennig's. Hated it. I thought he was perfect for the Four Horsemen. Mm-hmm. No pun. But and the third was Scott Steiner's, because it was so unnecessary. It was more unnecessary than the other two, because he's a OG NWA guy and had been in WCW for years at that point. There was no reason for Scott Steiner to turn on Rick and join the NWO. Zero.
And
so, yeah, I totally agree though. And this is probably where it was really, and I remember saying, George, we were watching, I was like, God, I always hated when Hennig joined the NWO. Like, I just hated it. It made me mad all over again. 25 years later.
You know what's funny is you just saying that right now. I feel like if you're going to stack up a team to go up against the NWO and be viable, why not stack the Horsemen with Kurt Hennig and Scott Steiner?
I'm not too.
I mean, look, everyone knows I can't stand Rick Steiner, but I understand at the time, you know, 94, 95, 96, 97, when he was in WCW, God, he was so good. And then once 97 comes, why not stack Chris Benoit, Dean Malenko, Kurt Hennig and Scott Steiner as the Four Horsemen, or even like you said, the Steiners, and then you have Kurt Hennig and Benoit. Why not? Is that not a viable team to beat the crap out of what the NWO threw out there on this night?
Yeah.
Like at some point, look, it's hard for me to look back as revisionist history and say, WCW was doing it wrong, because they were doubling the ratings of Raw at this time.
Yeah. But it only lasted for so long, though.
That's the
and
thing.
Now you can look back now. Again, revisionist history 25 years later.
Yeah.
You can literally go back and watch every Nitro, Thunder. Not that anybody wants to watch Thunder, but I didn't even want to watch Thunder back then. you know, and then pay-per-view and just see each nail that gets nailed into the coffin. You're like, there was the first one. Here's the second one. Here, you're just watching them dig their graves. And it's kind of crazy to like to go back and actually just see like, yeah, I could see why people would turn over to Raw right now. You know, it's just wild.
It was, to me, people were watching Nitro because even at this point, it's like, well, the NWO was still entertained to a point because WWE really wasn't getting their footing until maybe a little bit later on. But then once Austin popped, they were like, you know, this NWO thing is getting kind of lame. Let me go see what Steve Austin is doing over on the other channel.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah, I agree with you. And that's where watching this show, I was thinking the same thing. Like, man, like I would be, it'd be, and I listened to the Fall Brawl episode of 83 Weeks with Bischoff just to clear my, to, you know, refresh some things today.
Wasn't that recent too?
Yeah, it was like 2 weeks ago.
Okay.
And Bischoff said the reason why Hogan wasn't on his pay-per-view is because in 97, he had a 4 pay-per-view deal and he didn't want to use him for Fall Brawl. Okay. That doesn't mean you have to book Henning. Yeah. I'm not Henning. It doesn't mean you have to, book Savage to not be part of this match or Scott Hall.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, we can all do without the Diamond Dallas Page Lex Luger tag match. We can do without that.
Unfortunately.
As long as you load up on the Fall Brawl, because the only people only bought a ticket for War Games. That's the only reason people bought the ticket for this event. And that's, but that's how it was in WCW, is people bought tickets to see if there was going to be somebody to take the NWO down. And then, you know, they got tired of doing that because it just rarely ever happened.
Even it like never happened. They, what took the NWO down was the NWO.
Exactly. Yeah. So, all right. So we're, let's get into this pay-per-view here. The first match is a really good one. WCW Cruiserweight title, Chris Jericho coming in as a champ against Eddie Guerrero. This is the first pay-per-view where they have Jericho's music overdubbed with Break the Walls Down on Peacock, which is just so weak and annoying that they did this.
They couldn't play the other stuff because lawsuit.
They own the library. They own the library.
But the WCW themes were such blatant ripoffs of other pop culture songs, they can't use them.
Yeah,
like, they can't use Jericho's theme was basically Even Flow.
Yeah, and Pearl Jam's like, excuse me.
Yeah, that's funny. Yeah,
like Diamond Dallas Page's theme was
Smells Like Teen Spirit.
Smells Like Teen Spirit with like no lyrics.
Yep.
DDP, that was it. Self High Five, that was it, you know? That's all.
Yeah.
It was plain and obvious.
So this match, I gave 4 stars, man. I thought this was a great match between two ring generals that weren't even in their peak yet. Jericho was, I thought, in control for most of the match, but the Guerrero spots were so good. Their pace never slowed down. They busted their ass. The finish with the suplex was really well done, and I thought was a great way to open the show. What did you guys think?
Loved it. Yeah, this is. I believe the match I said to you, I was like, man, I'm so happy we actually doing this pay-per-view suite because this is the pay-per-view, or at least building up to the main event. But like, this is when I was like, God, I love WCW. These matches like this.
Yeah. Eddie
is just like, man, it just proved how good the WCW actually was at times. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. How about you, George? What'd you think?
I mean, it was a stellar match. I mean, Eddie and Jericho never had a bad match.
No.
Kind of like watch them in this. I was like, this was kind of like the preview for what we were eventually going to see in 2000, the day after WrestleMania 16, when they had that European title match, when Jericho was European champion, Eddie won it from him. I mean, these guys had such great chemistry, but they all did. Jericho, Eddie, Benoit, Malenko, all those guys who were essentially pilfered from ECW. These guys all had great chemistry together.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, and just seeing them together, it was like poetry right in front of you.
I agree. It's always fun when we do these WCW shows. I always know I'm going to see at least something great from Jericho, Guerrero, Mysterio, Malenko. It's just, it was so cool. To go Mongo. Back to these. Mongo. Yep. next match here is Harlem Heat versus the Steiners. I felt like these guys wrestled 500 times between 96 and 97.
Said that to Georgian.
Oh no, yeah. Dean! In the previous match, you pointed out that botch when Eddie Guerrero was coming out, and instead of the title card saying Eddie Guerrero, it said Harlem Heat with, yes, with right. Jackie.
And there was another botch right in the beginning of the match too. I'm trying to remember what it was, because I remember going to you like, we're not even 6 minutes in this pay per view and they fucked up twice.
Mm-hmm. What I will say, I know people ended up, you know, a lot of fans hated it, as you know, people love looking back and hating on things because it's fun now. Mm-hmm. I forgot to mention this thing to do, man. Yeah, I loved back in this era when WCW would have the pay-per-view logo and the mat in the middle of the ring. I just thought that was always cool. That's just
me. I agree.
Sorry.
I agree. Which is different, because they would put the logo on the mat, and you know, WWE would always, or WWF at the time, would always have it on the apron,
right? Curtains,
which was a nice contrast to each other.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, I gave this match 3.5 to 4 stars, man. Like, the winners mm-hmm. here is Rick and Scott Steiner. You know, that was a really good tag match between probably
two of the top five best ever.
Absolutely, you know, and one of my favorite teams ever, which was the Harlem Heat. And you know, going back and watching these WCW shows, I've really gotten a much better respect for the Steiners. Not just like their in-ring work, but also I, for some reason, after all these years, thought like Rick Steiner was the weak link of the team. Man, en contraire, like Rick, I apologize.
Is it because he wore headgear and you thought he was a wuss? I'm like, oh, look at this guy trying to protect his ears.
I was like, geez, look at Eugene, like 25 years prior. No, Rick Steiner, man, Rick Steiner was just, he was really good. And I mean, Scott was just a freak of nature, just a freak athlete.
Freakzilla.
Yeah, he really was. There was just
Big Bad Booty Daddy.
Yeah. These two also just were so stiff. They beat the hell out of each other. You know, the Heat Seeker move was just so insane.
Oh, so good.
And I thought that was it for sure. But, you know, the Steiners will, you know, went on after this to face the Outsiders and have the win vacated by some odd rule. So it's like clockwork when it comes to the NWO. Mm-hmm, so, God, looking back at these shows, that I hate 95% of the NWO logic. But at the time, I loved it.
Yeah.
It's so weird.
It's just, like, you're totally right. It's so weird because, but you look back and watch it now going like, I don't even like these guys as heels. Like, I look back and go, man, I actually just fucking hate them. Like,
yeah,
it's just getting mad. I just get fucking mad because it's so clear of the shit that just, the shit housery that put this company under. Because it wasn't WWF. It was, everything was self-inflicted. It's funny. They were owned by Warner. So it makes sense.
Right. Next match here is actually very underrated. I think people should go back and watch. Is a WCW television title. Alex Wright versus Ultimo Dragon. The winner and still WCW TV champ was Alex Wright. I gave this match. It was a little too long.
It was like 5 minutes too long.
Yes. Yeah. I gave this match. They had to make up for freaking, you know, later on in the match and the pay-per-view. So I guess whatever. I gave this around 3.5 stars because the first part of this match lulled, was dull in certain places, but the second half of this match more than made up for it. It was so fast. The back and forth at the end made this really exciting. Alex Wright laid in a chin lock for like longer chunks of the match than he should have, but he was impressive. He really was.
Yeah.
Greatest
German suplex in history.
God, he was just fun to watch, and Ultimo Dragon was just always pretty crisp to watch as well. I hate the roll up endings, so that took away from it a little bit. But all in all, I'm not going to complain.
Wasn't a
roll up.
He won with the German suplex. That was Alex Wright's finishing move.
The German. Oh, suplex. That's right. I forgot about that.
The bridging German suplex.
Yeah. Good call. I'm not going to complain about it, but I still gave it around 3.5 stars. I always enjoyed Ultimo Dragon matches, and boy, just the way WCW straps, you know, bad gimmicks to certain guys. I thought Alex Wright was one of those, you know, Disco Inferno, although Disco Inferno made that shit work like gold.
Disco sucks. He was just part of a good company. Never carried. He was only kept around because NWO thought he was a joke and made fun of him. Yeah, that's why you're going to keep paying a guy and keep him on the fucking payroll.
Right.
Keep wasting money. Keep wasting money on a guy just because Kevin Nash is going to laugh at him. Get the fuck out of here. Yeah. You even know how businesses work?
Mean Gene is backstage and he plugs the hotline like he always does. 1-900-909-9900. Again, I'll never forget it. The NWO cuts into frame, but just quickly passed by the camera. Gene walks to the locker room. They just left from it. Kurt Hennig is laying on the ground. Gene calls for help as they go back down to the ring for the next match.
Gene also called these guys rude. He's like, oh, these guys, he's a rudest bunch of people I've ever seen in my life.
You get them, Mean Gene. Next match is Dean Malenko versus Jeff Jarrett. You know, the winner of this match will be the number one contender for the United States title and will get a shot at Halloween Havoc. The winner is Jeff Jarrett. Again, another good match. I gave this 3.5 stars as well. You know, Jarrett would go on to Halloween Havoc to face Steve Mongo McMichael again for the U.S. title. This match at points was a tad bit boring.
face him in a Deborah McMichael on a pole match.
I thought both men had really good chemistry, but seeing Malenko tap out in the end to me was kind of shocking, weirdly enough. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, I mean, Malenko was just so smooth in a ring. I feel like he is one of the more, you know, underutilized and underused talents during wrestling's hottest period. I really loved Malenko was just like perfect. I've never seen, maybe you guys have, I've never seen Malenko botch a move.
No.
Never.
No, not that I'm aware of.
Yeah, just never.
I'm sure some idiot out there is listening. I'm like, oh, what about this time with Thunder?
The NWO buys ad space, and we are greeted by the members that will be in the War Games tonight. They are making fun of Kurt Hennig and bragging about how they took him out. They say the Horsemen will be next tonight. Nash says that people are sorely mistaken if they think the NWO doesn't have a plan. Yeah, we all know the plan, you idiot.
Yeah, we all know that.
Yeah, Nash says tonight they will go out and retire every member of the Horsemen. They finish by mocking Arn Anderson again. By the way, Arn Anderson had absolutely nothing to do with the cage match. So just meaningless jabs because that's, you know, because reasons.
Just burial jabs for no reason.
Yeah. Here we go. Next match. This is a classic. It's a
fucking
catch-as-catch-can match.
Fucking barn burner. 5-star, 7 in the Tokyo Dome.
Yep. Mortis and Wrath versus the Faces of Fear, which was Ming and the Barbarian. I gave this match 5 stars. I'm just kidding.
The other way?
The other way, yes.
I love the Faces of Fear, though. I was telling George. I was like, you know, you always see those memes on like social media. There's like, oh, pick one to defend you and the others go after you. It's like, no, I'm picking the APA and the Faces of Fear to defend me because nobody's getting past those 4 dudes. Yeah.
but also before the others attack me, I'm going to tell the Barbarian, Meng, Farouk and Bradshaw that these guys are going to no sell their moves.
Oh, the only guys I would probably take over all 4 of them would be the Steiners. That would be it. Because they would probably legitimately kill you.
Haku is like the toughest man in wrestling.
I get it. But, you know, he can't do anything if he can't hit the guy. I mean, freaking Scott Steiner was an All-American mat wrestler. And so was basically Rick. So it's
Haku
like,
will eat your face, Chris. I don't think you understand.
I also didn't know that Haku's sons were both professional wrestlers in Japan.
I didn't know that either.
One of them, I think, was in WWE. George, we talked about it. Was it Tama Tonga that was in?
Yeah, WWE? he was Camacho.
Yeah.
Oh, I hate Tama Tonga. He's a piece of shit.
Yeah, but I didn't know they were his kids.
We're recording. Assumed, he's gonna come after you now.
I just assumed they were part of the Anoa'i family.
Yeah.
And anytime I see like tribal on people, I'm just like, ah, oh, they're related to Rikishi.
Yeah. Somehow.
They're all Dwayne's.
Dwayne's not even a real Dwayne.
Dwayne's not even a real.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, of course he's not. Clown.
He couldn't resist.
Earlier, he looks fucking fantastic, man.
Yeah, he's like, awesome.
No homo. He looks great.
No, it's okay to say somebody looks great. I want his
fringy jackets too. I need a jacket with fringe on it.
I want the Painmaker jacket.
I've been talking about fringe jackets for years. Mm-hmm. I do.
The winners were Wrath and Mortis, for those wondering. Not that you were at all.
It never should have been. I had to watch Brian Clark, Adam Bomb Brian Clark, get a get a clean pinfall win on King Haku.
What was the movie? Oh, The Rock Bottom.
He did The Rock Bottom.
Yes. Yep. Gene, so
Dwayne stole something else. We don't say.
Yeah, you don't say. Flex coming up.
Oh, God. Here we go.
here we go. Mean Gene is backstage with the members of the Horsemen, obviously sans Kurt Hennig, who will be involved in War Games. Gene speculates about that situation, and Benoit grabs the mic to run down the scum in the NWO. So take your pick. He takes a dig at Nash having so many characters in the industry. McMichael says that inside the cage, there will be nowhere for them to run. Gene then asks Flair what he is thinking tonight. Flair cuts his usual excellent promo, and he says that if he quit when the chips were down, he wouldn't be there. Flair talks to Nash directly, and he said that he has disrespected the Horsemen for the last time. He says he has more desire than the NWO combined. Probably accurate. Unless there's beer, then Scott Hall is more desired than anyone. He said tonight they are prepared to bleed and sweat to make them pay. Gene sends it back down to the ring. So we get another.
I like how Flair is just sitting there like during the whole thing calm, and then until Gene goes and Rick, and then Rick immediately goes from zero to 10,000.
Yeah.
Beautiful. We both laughed when that happened.
Yeah. Because I knew it was gonna happen. I'm like, Rick's too calm. I was like, oh, he's gonna go. He's in there right here.
Here we go to another Matt classic, the Giant versus Scott Flash Norton.
Like, I took a fucking nap.
I just don't get it.
I love Scott Norton. I don't give a fuck. I love Scott Norton.
I did give this match 2 stars because I will say it was a very short and sweet, like, brawl. Norton showed, like, real impressive power by picking up the Giant and doing whatever what he wanted. You know, in the end, the Giant winning makes sense since he was a top guy in the company at the time. But, man, kudos to Flash Norton here for, you know, utilizing the time that he's got on pay-per-view. So good for him on that.
Chris, you talk about the we talked about the how like the booking didn't make, you know, how like the booking with the NWO didn't make sense like 96% of the time. This is kind of a prime example because when you look at the rundown of the card, and I didn't pick this up when I watched the pay-per-view, but the final 3 matches all feature NWO members.
Yeah,
it was like every member of the NWO had to like close out the show. There's no reason why the Giant and Scott Norton should be 2 matches behind the main event. It's not like it was a cooldown match from the Faces of Fear and Wrath and Mortis. People were cooled down enough. They're like, ah, shit, this is boring.
All right, so what we're going to do here is we're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to wrap things up on the other side. This is the Hot Tag Wrestling Podcast, and we'll be right back to wrap up War Games, which was Fall Brawl 1997 here. We'll see you guys in just a few seconds.
Oh, here he goes. You're fake.
Welcome back, Hot Tag Wrestling Podcast.
I feel like you're cheating on me, Chris.
Yeah, I know, right? How dare I?
Loyalty.
You unfaithful prick.
It's ridiculous. I should be very nice to the Sixers. I mean, God, hell, they pay my mortgage. I'm joking. They don't. Here we go. No disqualification tag match, the match we all asked for. DDP and Lex Luger versus Scott Hall and the Macho Man Randy Savage. It's like so weird. Like, why would Scott Hall not be with Kevin Nash? Like,
I said the exact same thing to Dean. I'm like, this doesn't make any sense to me.
Nothing at all.
It's just so dumb. So let's see. Winners, Diamond Dallas Page and Lex Luger. The match I gave 1 star. Lex, you know, Luger and Page were originally scheduled to be in War Games, but they were taken out. There wasn't much to the match. It was more of an angle being built between Hall and Zbyszko specifically. So let's include DDP and Luger and Macho Man for some dumb shit with Scott Hall and Larry Zbyszko. like so stupid.
And like and the match ended in such like a fuck way, mm-hmm. where it's just Zbyszko for 5 minutes threatening that he's going to get in the ring, just giving Lex Luger enough time to like crouch down behind Scott Hall and like roll him up.
Yeah.
What he should have done if he was going to do that was at least have Luger stand up and put Hall in the have Zbyszko push Hall back and have Luger put him up in the torture rack.
Agreed.
But you know, we're not going to have any dominant wins over the NWO. No, sir. No. Save that shit down the road.
Absolutely.
Cheap wins all around.
Yeah, the only thing that I felt that was really good about this match was, again, the great chemistry between Savage and Paige. You know, they beat the hell out of each other, and it looked very, very believable.
They always had great chemistry.
Always. So that was great. Gene is back, and they are asking him for an update on Curt Hennig, which he doesn't have. He shills the hotline again and says that they have some groundbreaking information because, you know, of course they do. Gene shoots to a commercial for the next pay-per-view event, which was Halloween Havoc 1997. We are not covering that this year. I think we might have already covered it in the past. We did.
I think we did. I'm pretty sure.
I feel like we did.
Okay.
Yeah. because we talked about the Eddie and Ray match.
Right. Literally. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I remember. But we will be talking Halloween Havoc 1998.
And I can't wait.
Michael Buffer is here to do the introductions and run down the rules of the War Games. In case you don't know, two men enter for 5 minutes to start the match. They have a coin flip, and the winner gets to send another guy in, and they alternate in two-minute intervals. The match doesn't start until everyone is in the ring. You can only win by submission or surrender, which is basically another way of submission. I think I did that right, so we're good there. Here we go. War Games match. The biggest stars in the industry. Team NWO, Kevin Nash, Six, Conan, and Buff Bagwell versus Team Horseman, which was Ric Flair, Chris Benoit, Steve Mongo McMichael, and Curt Hennig. The winners, as you all are shocked by this, the NWO. I gave this match -2 stars.
That's generous.
Yeah, the match itself was like whatever, but the Hennig heel turn was the move of the match. It was, to me, so telegraphed throughout the entire show that something like this could and probably was going to happen. But it was effective because if anyone watches this match, the crowd ate it up in terms of like they hated it, but they reacted so viciously.
The crowd ate up the finger poke of doom.
I know.
Go back and watch that. You see this fat kid with his face painted half white, half black, and a sugar bowl haircut. And the moment Hogan gets a three, he's like, whoa! Like,
yeah.
The greatest thing in the fucking world. Fucking WCW.
I agree. And look, you know, it's always uncomfortable kind of talk about the guy, but I've said it before. The star of this entire match was Chris Benoit.
Yeah.
I mean, he just stands out. He stood out every time he was in a ring. These matches, you know, are obviously hard to follow, but this was pretty straightforward as it gets. And Benoit was clearly the wrestler of the entire thing. I thought the heel turn was a good spot, but overall, the match, I just felt like it underdelivered because there was just, other than Flair and I guess Kurt, there's just no star power. You know, you're in the midst of the greatest run, almost putting the other company out of business. And this is a big September pay-per-view, a massive build. And you felt like Diamond Dallas Page and Lex Luger weren't good enough to be part of this match, but Six and Conan and Buff Bagwell are. I don't get it. I don't understand. After the match, Hennig gets back in the ring and joins his new group. Nash says, they beat the Horsemen right in their backyard. They celebrate in the ring as the show goes off the air. What makes this even fucking worse is that there was zero payoff for the Horsemen on this entire storyline. There was no payoff. The NWO, again, just ran through a massive, massive stable in that, you know, NWA, Crockett, WCW, history that was the Horsemen. They were just beaten and next. And it's just, why? Well, it doesn't make any sense to me.
Mm-hmm.
And look, I know I'm repeating myself, George, when I say it doesn't make sense to me, because that's fucking WCW. But do you have anything on, like, to add? Like, do you have an opinion on, one, the members of the match, and then two, why they couldn't have gone into Halloween Havoc with the Horsemen getting paybacks?
Oh boy, do I have some opinions on this match.
Oh, and just before you get into it, I'm sorry. Remember,
we're Gale.
Remember, George, before we say
this
get into
this.
This
is a kid show.
Yeah, before we get into this, for like three straight weeks, the NWO bagged on Arn Anderson, who was not a part of anything in this fall brawl or anything after. So take that as you will as well. Go ahead.
It, the thing with, I'm going to talk about the NWO members first, and then I'll get into what I think they should have done.
I'm sitting back horseman, and I'll enjoy it.
Horseman wise, Nash being in a match makes sense. Mm-hmm. He's, you know, he's one of the founding three. It makes perfect sense. Six, I mean, he's Nash's running buddy, you know, when Hall isn't around. I don't know why he was in blue jeans. I guess we'll never know. Conan, whatever. I actually forgot he was part of the NWO, to be perfectly honest with you. And that smarmy piece of shit, Buff Bagwell. I fucking hate Buff Bagwell. And it has nothing to do with his in-ring work, which is mid at best.
Mm-hmm. Disrespect.
It's, yeah, I don't care. What's he gonna do? His Twitter account is even verified. Clown. You could get verified as Buff Bagwell before he could get verified as Buff Bagwell.
I don't know. I do some pretty vicious insults on him.
That's true. The thing that irks me the most about him, I guess this maybe this was the point, but I hate it when he was a face too. It's when he stares into the goddamn camera and just mugs and talks. It's like, shut the fuck up, you stupid.
Oh, we lost George.
Oh man.
So George, hold on and hold that. George was really, really getting into something good there. So as soon as he gets back here, we'll go right back, and hopefully he can regain his train of thought, because he was really on a roll there. There you go. All right, go ahead. Keep going.
Yeah, it's a fucking smug. Like, he's always doing, like, the four horses. Like, it's like, four. It's like, yo, we get it, idiot. Shut the fuck up and, like, go die somewhere. Like,
wow.
He had just nothing. And he did the same thing with his face. I'm like, God, I hate everything about him. And everything I hate about him is why I hate the Young Bucks, because they do the exact same thing. It's just annoying. Like, I don't, there's just something about it. It just, it's like you could just take a cheese grater and grate me across the face with it. That would feel better than watching a Buff Bagwell match.
Mm-hmm. I would enjoy that.
Scotty Riggs was the most talented person in the American Males. I said it.
Interesting.
Scotty Riggs is actually, I think he actually was really good friends with RVD. Mm-hmm. I think they actually came up together, trained.
Nice.
I could be wrong on that, but I think, because I remember an ECW angle when he went in, but he wasn't Scotty Riggs, he was Scotty Anton.
Oh, okay.
He went by his regular name. Or something along those lines. But I remember that being a thing. But like the horseman thing, you're absolutely right. There was no payoff to the horseman. Like, it was then, it was like, all right, we're going to put you guys down and you're finished. That's it. Henning would have been, and Dean and I have talked about this on numerous occasions, he would have been the perfect member for the horseman. Like, mm-hmm. He's that guy. He's that old school. He's an old school heel, and he's got the talent. Like, he's the guy that the horsemen are looking for. Which
you
obviously
talking
is
about,
a
show. You talking about Mongo?
I'm talking about Kurt Hennig.
Oh,
I mean, I'm talking about Mr. Perfect, not a Mr. Imperfect.
West Texas Rednecks.
That's hey,
because you know that Minnesotan.
Yeah, straight from Texas by way of Minneapolis. Mm-hmm. He would have just fit perfectly, and you could have built up the horseman to actually like be a threat to the NWO, but that was it. And we didn't see a horseman again until roughly about almost a full year later, right, Dean?
Mm-hmm.
because I know because I know you love that promo where the horse and reform, mm-hmm. but there really wasn't much of a payoff to that either. At least nothing that really stood out.
Mm-hmm. I agree. It was just there was no payoff. There was, mm-hmm. I mean, you could have done something with like Flair and Nash the next month, or God, even at the end of the match, let's just say the Horsemen win. Okay. I mean, let's just say the NWO keeps their win. Maybe at the end of the match, you have something where the Horseman just gets a big beat down on them. Yeah. And, you know, you get an Arn Anderson appearance where he comes in and does a massive, you know, spine buster on Bagwell or somebody. And just at least
spine.
Yeah. And at least gets something back. Send the crowd home happy a little bit. But no, you have to make sure the NWO is always strong.
Or at least have Arn come out on the stage with a microphone and be like, "You think this is over? Like we've only just begun." You know.
Yeah.
And then you have it build up for some. You have an anticipation, because after you watch this pay-per-view, what is really your motivation to watch Nitro the next night?
I agree.
To see what Kurt Hennig has to say. He's going to be a mid-tier guy in the NWO.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's not going to be Hogan level. He's not going to be Hall or Nash. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, he'll hold the U.S. title, but, you know, anybody was holding the U.S. title at that point. There was really just zero payoff for the Horsemen. And you can't help but kind of feel bad for Wreck.
Yeah, kind of, for sure.
And I'm also surprised that he didn't blade in this match.
That was very shocking.
Get that out there.
Yeah, WCW wasn't they really didn't like blading at all.
But even though Hogan was only on a 4 pay-per-view deal, you mean to tell me you couldn't just throw like $1,000 in his pocket to just walk out and like hug Kurt Hennig at the end of the match or something?
Right.
Something. Be like, oh, and here's Hogan.
Right.
Because this will be what? So he was at Hog Wild or Road Wild the mm-hmm. previous month. He wasn't at Fall Brawl. He wasn't at Halloween Havoc, and he wasn't at World War III.
Mm-hmm.
So he wasn't showing up again on pay-per-view until Starrcade.
That was apparently the deal. And it's funny because you talk about watching Nitro the next night. There are two Nitros to follow this pay-per-view. Was like two of their lowest rated shows in like 3 months. So, you know, not for nothing. Yes, Halloween Havoc ended up being a mega pay-per-view. But still, you know, the outcome of this pay-per-view did not serve them greatly the next couple weeks on Nitro.
And even the Giant beating Scott Norton, just it was all for nothing, because he was eventually going to rejoin the NWO.
Right, exactly. So here we go. Overall, guys, what do you guys rate this show out of a 10? Dean, I'll start with you.
I mean, everything up until the main event, I thought was either like decent to like great. So, man, like, but the main event for me really just hinders the pay per view.
Mm-hmm.
So I would probably give it like a 7.5, maybe an 8. Maybe like, I think it might be the rest of the card might be good enough to be an 8, but
yeah,
you know, I'll say an 8.
So, I sat right at 7.5. I'm not going to lie. Like, I went into the show thinking it was going to be a lot better than it was. And it actually surprised me with how decent it really was. There was really good quality matches in the show, as well as a lot of good storytelling to further some feuds. You know, conspicuous by his absence was Hulk Hogan. But I don't think that hurt the show overall, but I do agree with you, Dean, that it would have been nice just to see him show up at the end.
That was George.
I agree with you, George, where I would have liked to have seen Hogan just show face. You're the leader of the NWO and you just got a huge new member.
They didn't have like a big trauma where he can do like a video package. Like, oh, welcome to the team, brother. This works for me.
Yeah. It's, you know, the opening match between Jericho and Guerrero was an awesome way to start the show. I think the TV title match was a very good standout as well. This also, like we just talked about, had some very curious booking decisions. I know the Four Horsemen are a strong group, but having someone like Mongo in the match kind of took away from it a little bit. But he could have easily been replaced by, you know, Luger or Page. Luger would have made sense from a historical reason, being a past member of the Horsemen. But I still, you know, Mongo isn't even in my realm of thinking when it comes to issues with the pay-per-view or even the main event.
I'm sick of the Mongo slander.
Yeah. I don't mind Mongo. You know, hey, look, all the power to him, man. That dude's fighting a battle, so I hope he keeps kicking out here. Also, why were these members of the NWO picked? Like, that damaged the entire brand, in my opinion.
Hey, at least they didn't pick Vincent.
I mean, anything's better than freaking Buff Bagwell.
I would have taken a pile of dirt wearing an NWO shirt over Buff Bagwell.
So you would have taken Buff Bagwell.
Dirt's got class. Dirt has charisma.
Yeah, I mean, I understand Hogan was off probably doing something else, like probably, you know, Santa with muscles or something, but at least have Scott Hall in the match. It's just very bizarre booking, and I don't know why I'm surprised, but it's just when you watch it in front of you, you go back and I'm doing the write up for the show, and I'm thinking, God, this is just so damn bizarre. And, you know, but overall, it was a really good show, and it was better than a lot of the WCW shows that we've covered. So, yeah, I was right in between that 7.5 and 8 because for WCW standards, this was a very good show. George?
I mean, I think the reason why they picked those NWO members is because they were the only ones who didn't already have a match booked, you know, with Scott. But Scott Norton the Giant could have been fucking washed. You didn't need that at all. You could have put Scott Norton in the match. I mean, at least him and Buff were a tag team. It would have made some sort of sense. But yeah, it's just, I mean, on the whole, on the pay-per-view, I'll give it a hard 7.
Yeah.
Because the Guerrero-Jericho match really got me hyped for the rest of the pay-per-view.
Yeah.
And I was enjoying a lot of it. I mean, I thought the Alex Roy Ultimo Dragon match went a little long. And even though, you know, I mocked the Faces of Fear and Wrath and Mortis, it was still an entertaining match.
Mm-hmm.
That was still like pro wrestling and sports entertainment. That was what that was, right down to it. Mm-hmm. I mean, those gimmicks were straight inspired by Mortal Kombat. Mm-hmm. The only thing I was missing was Glacier.
Yeah. All right. So that's Fall Brawl 1997. Next week, we are going way back. We are going 28 years to be exact, actually. October 23rd, 1994, we are going to be covering Halloween Havoc. That was another witnessing of the terrifying rage in the cage. This was headlined, of course, by Hulk Hogan, the champion defending his WCW title against Ric Flair. Also in this match was the Nasty Boys versus Terry Funk and Bunkhouse Buck. Let's see, Jim Duggan against Steve Austin, Dustin Rhodes versus Arn Anderson. Pretty Wonderful, which is Paul Orndorff and everyone's favorite wrestler, Paul Roma, defeating Stars and Stripes, the Patriot, and Marcus Alexander Bagwell. But however, the real reason we're covering this match is Johnny B. Badd against the Honky Tonk Man.
Fuck yeah.
Nobody is coming out a winner after this pay-per-view.
So, however, this was a big pay-per-view for WCW at the time. This was 14,000 people in a sellout in Joe Louis Arena in Detroit, Michigan. So, I'm looking forward to covering that next week. All right, so this has been the Hot Tag Wrestling Podcast, the Hot Tag Podcast on Instagram. You guys can get all show updates there, as always. So I thank you guys very much for continuously downloading the show. It means a lot. Thank you. Rate and review anywhere you guys listen to your podcast. Rate and review it. It means a lot. I really would appreciate that. All right. So I'm Chris C. Francesco, and that's Johnny Hot Tag, George Rogers, and Dean Holzapple. Boys, I know you guys got the 666 Weeks of Horror coming up. However, that's not this week. What are you guys coming up for the next couple of weeks before we get into that?
It's a mystery.
We have to fit two shows in before then, so let's figure it out.
I believe we are going to do the second episode of Tanuki Talk is going to be one of them, and as of right now, the docket still stands for episode 3, Revenge of the Sith, to awesome. Finish off the Star Wars saga.
Awesome.
Well, maybe not finished off, but as far as I'm concerned, everything that follows after episode 6 is fan fiction.
Yeah, we got to do some BTOS talk, so I'm looking forward to doing that soon. All right, so I hope everybody has a great rest of the weekend, and we'll catch you guys down the road. Have a great...
I hope you all have a terrible weekend.
There we go. And that's why...
just a little hint.
Loyalty.
We have another channel that's making a return soon.
I've heard this before.
We are 100%.
Thank God. Definitely. Without that show,
the 60th anniversary is literally in like 4 weeks.
Thank God. That's the best podcast out there. All right.
Some of our Chitty Chitty Bang Bang podcast, right?
Fuck yeah.
Yeah, right.
Babes in Toyland following that up.
All right, everybody. We'll catch you guys next week. See you. Bye-bye.